Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me once again is Marvin Smith. And besides being a former co-host of the show, Marvin played in the NFL for the Los Angeles Rams and the Oakland Raiders. He is also an ordained minister and very active in many charities that involve helping people all over the world, making him a great fit to co-host any show. Now, for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much, and please continue to help spread the word that each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know that can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we together can make a positive difference in the world. Now, Marvin, as someone who has and continues to make a positive difference in the world, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Well, you know, Alan, thank you once again for even invited me to be part of the show on a continued basis. So I appreciate you much. I appreciate all the great work you've been doing and years of hard work. And I'm so glad you're older than I am.
Well, for those that don't know, Marvin and I go back, and I think we've decided that we'll stop at, say, over 30. Okay, over 30 years.
Yes.
And we'll leave it at that, and then people can use their imagination. So Marvin, share a little bit, besides hanging out at a beautiful beach somewhere, share a little bit about what you're doing at this moment.
Oh man, I am, it's a lot, Alan. I guess to sum it up and make it really short, I'm just kind of doing, I call it God's work, the hearts of my desire. And, you know, I'm just at a point in life that it's about helping others. And so anytime I get the opportunity, as well as just, you know, working with a teen in crisis, to a kid in a neighborhood or a young family that's trying to figure out living in those uncertain times, what that feels like behaviorally and psychologically, and just doing whatever I can to be a positive light, trying to sprinkle light everywhere I can go.
Well, and I know you've always done that. Now, share a little bit in regards to some of the things that are going on now. Okay, because times have changed. We're in an environment that is new to all of us. And what are some things that you're doing to sort of not only help you and your family, but help people kind of get through this time?
Well, I mean, it's looking at this time, which is very unprecedented. I mean, it's something that's never happened in my lifetime, in our lifetime, and I guess in all those who may be listening, you know, where the world just came to an abrupt stop. And, you know, and what is it doing to families and what is it doing to kids? And so first and foremost, I'm just trying to make sure initially that my family, you know, I have, I have six kids and eight grandkids and add my mom and dad in there and my mother-in-law. It's like almost 20 of us, right? Mm-hmm. But the blessing is that we're all close around one another and we get a chance to, you know, continue to have, you know, communicate with one another. And just basically, it's okay. Life is okay, because I'm really seeing it too in a lot of families that we're in crisis mode, and people don't. Well, I don't believe mankind was ever meant to be locked up somewhere. That's why I look at in prisons, solitary confinement is such a detrimental aspect of prison life, because you know you're locked up for 23 hours a day in the cell by yourself, and it's horrible. You know, looking at it from that standpoint, I'm just with my family. I'm trying to make sure everybody's staying sane. Mm-hmm. And looking at times will pass, and we just have to continue to adapt with time. And unfortunately, you know, all the rhetoric, that's what I'm going to call it from how I see it, all the rhetoric on the news and the media It's supposed to be investigative reporting, but it sounds more like opinionated reporting. And if people are hearing sound bites and images, and it's I'm seeing people get really scared.
When you and I were talking about the topic for today, one of the things that you mentioned that in one of your enrichment programs, we were talking about some of the kids, because again, for those people that don't know, Marvin he's run charter schools, he's had enrichment programs, and he's helping children of all ages. But share with us,
and all races,
absolutely. But share with us a little bit. You were telling me a story in regards to a girl, and I just thought it was really touching. If you can kind of share that with our audience, because I think it really fits with what many young girls are going through.
Yeah, I think even, looking at the topic matter, young girls and body image and just self-esteem is at an all-time high. As I was looking at Dr. Charlotte, kind of some of the information, when social media, when people have been relegated to not being able to have interaction with people, and all of a sudden now that social media is starting to drive our behavior, and I didn't get enough likes because I didn't have enough filter on my picture to look the way I should look, and which is a falsehood in the first place. So all these false imageries are going on, and as is shown, there's been billions of dollars in the industry just in body shaping, I'm reminded of a story of a young girl. I had one of my programs, and it was enrichment, Corporate Kids Cyber Club, and she was the only girl that wanted to do computer repair, and all the boys and the girls, like, you're a tomboy, that's for boys, that's not being very girly, and I just encouraged her. I said, Anna, listen, this is something you really want to do. It's your heart's desire. Don't let all that stuff stop you. You are a girl. You're a beautiful young lady, and you're smart. So go for it. Right. Long story short, get to the end of it. She did really well. She outperformed all the boys, and then got a lot of respect. And she came over to me afterwards. She says, "Mr. Marvin." I said, "Yeah." She says, "You tricked me." I said, "What do you mean? You tricked me into learning." I'm like. And I got this big smile on my face. I said, "Oh, really?" I said, "You want to know something?" She says, "What?" As I tell you, you're a beautiful young lady. It hasn't changed you. And what you've learned, too late, because you can't take it back now, right? And she just said, and she just smiled. She went on, did really well in high school, went on to college. And far as I haven't heard from her lately, but I know she's a success story somewhere and probably advocating on behalf of, those that look like her that were in the same situation and being supportive. So I think the topic matter today, this whole thing about, body image of young ladies, and I even see it going on with young men as well. I think it's apropos. I think it's a subject matter right on time.
Well, and again, and it fits perfect with our topic today, because our topic today is about loving yourself and growing up fearless. Our guest, Dr. Charlotte Markey, is a professor of psychology and founding director of the Health Science Center at Rutgers University, and has been a leading author, spokesperson, researcher, and clinician in the field of body image for more than two decades. She is the author of Smart People Don't Diet, How the Latest Science Can Help You Lose Weight Permanently, which Scientific American praised as possibly the best book about weight loss ever written. Now, another book that she has is Body Positive, Understanding and Improving Body Image in Science and in Practice. But her first book, written for preteens, the body image book for girls, Love Yourself and Grow Up Fearless, will be our focus today. Dr. Markey, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, share with us a little bit about your journey that brought you to this point now.
Yeah, I think, growing up as a girl, a lot of this was relevant to my experience, but especially because I was a dancer growing up. So I danced at San Francisco Ballet and just really lived in a world where everyone was dissatisfied with their bodies and concerned about their bodies and criticized for their bodies. And so that, I think, has had a lasting impression on me. That was my childhood. And when I went to college, I thought I would study to be a teacher. I always loved kids and adolescents, and I thought I would teach. And then the more psychology I took, the more I loved it. And so I am a teacher. I'm a professor.
Yeah. I'll say you would have been a great teacher.
But I do. I love talking with kids. I love kids. And I realized, you know, I can combine my interests in psychology and teaching by teaching psychology and also by studying young people. So a lot of my research has focused on pre-adolescents and adolescents. And, you know, I think all of the book experiences I've had writing books and writing blogs and articles for public audiences has led me to feel like we needed to get this information straight to kids, that, you know, most of my writing has been for adults. So this was a challenge and really exciting and something I've been really enjoying, both talking with kids and working on the book, and then also now and trying to share it with girls.
Now, is the book focused more as far as the reader? Are you hoping that the parents are going to read this so that they can do a better job with their young girls? Or is this something that they're going to want to maybe read with them, or let the girls read it themselves and glean what they can from it?
I think there's no wrong approach, really. That I think, you know, I've had parents say to me that they've tried to talk about these issues with their daughters, and it's either awkward or it doesn't go very far, or the kid doesn't really engage. And for parents like that, I think there's nothing wrong with, you know, buy a book, leave it in your kid's room, and there's a decent chance they'll at least open it, right? And there's a lot in here. It's a pretty, I think, thorough coverage of the topic. So I think there's something for everyone. So I hope that if it was just kind of, you know, snuck on a kid's bed, that wouldn't be the worst thing to do either. I have even just some friends and colleagues who have bought it for their younger girls who are even 8 or 9, and they say they're reading it together, which I think is lovely. And it's a good way to initiate conversations with kids, make sure they're understanding some of the content, and also just sort of set the stage then. So when they get older and some of this is even more relevant, you've already had some of these conversations, so it won't be as awkward. And, you know, I've had adults look at it and say, like, wow, I wish I had had this as a kid. I learned something. So I think, you know, hopefully it's kind of for everyone, even though the readership is meant to be about, you know, a 12-year-old girl.
So, you know, Dr. Mark,
go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, and looking at it, being a little more specific, you know, how, you know, from your perspective, how should parents talk to their daughters, you know, with insecurities? I mean, that, because you kind of touched on a little bit, it could be a little touch and go there. I mean, so, you know, what is your perspective on that?
Yeah, I think this is really important. I think it's really, really important for parents to be really reassuring. It's really cliche, I know, but if you can't say something nice, then do not say anything at all when it comes to your kid's appearance. You know, they will get negative feedback from the world. That is just how it works. But even in my own research, I found girls as young as 5 to start to experience dissatisfaction with their bodies and appearance. And so we really need to tread carefully here and make sure we're also setting a good example ourselves in terms of how we think about and talk about our own bodies.
Well, and I think that's a great point. And not only just how to talk about our own bodies, but set an example for your own eating habits. You know, is that, you know, if you have the right eating habits, you're going to at least start them in the right direction. You can't control everything, but, you know, what are some examples that you can see where parents can start making the changes in such a way that the their children will naturally make the change rather than feel like it's a double standard? Okay, well, I'm going to eat all of this crap that I want, but you're a growing child, so I want you to eat this, this, and this. Because to me, that doesn't work.
No, I mean, you know, food can become a battleground very, very quickly. And you don't have to be a parent for long to figure this out, because even infants will do it. Mm-hmm. And you don't want food, something that should be a source of pleasure and community, bringing, oh, you really have to model, you know, relatively healthy eating habits. No one has to be perfect, or no one has to count fat or calories or sugar. But like, we all know that, you know, an egg and a piece of toast or some variant of that would be a nice breakfast, whereas like a really humongous sugary muffin is a sort of a splurge, maybe for not every day, but maybe for the weekend. So, I mean, most of us kind of know this is common sense, and we want to model that behavior for our kids, and then also just provide them with good options. So we don't need to be really rigid or really strict. There can sometimes be, of course, sweets in the house. In fact, my kids have something sweet probably every day. But it's not a big deal to them because I've never tried to completely keep it from them. So they know, like, they can have it and like a tater or leave it. A lot of it is just, you know, good sort of old-fashioned advice maybe even your grandmother would have given you, which is just kind of moderation, be sensible, don't fight about food, enjoy it, and keep good stuff in the house.
It's like what you're sharing is just, I got a big smile on my face because, I mean, words of wisdom, words we've heard all our life, you know, it's kind of like, and if you kind of not get caught up with this rhetoric from sometimes the ways of the world, as you said, a word that made me think about politics was battleground, right? I'm going, yeah. Oh, battleground. Okay. You know, but it makes me think about how if we just look at that with some common sense, and I was talking with a parent one time, and they were telling their preteen something was going on, and they said, the parent, the child said, why? And the parent goes, because I said so. And I just kind of went, okay. And I couldn't say anything at the moment, but later I came back and said something to the parent. I go, you know, I understand what you're saying, but a lot of times the reason why they're inquisitive, if you at least give them some insight, it helps them navigate the situation. But saying, because I said so, becomes a rebellious state. So
it's true. And we don't want to fight about food. I mean, food is a good thing. And sometimes I think as a culture, we've just forgotten that because there's so many competing messages coming at us about how we should eat or what we should eat or how much. And really most of this is common sense. And we don't want our kids to expend needless energy worrying about food. We want them to have a sort of healthy relationship with food and feel confident that they can make choices. And it doesn't have to be a big deal. You know, every decision you make about food does not have to be a big deal. So we want kids to feel empowered.
Yeah. And on that last note, you know, Doctor, I was reading some statistics and I was talking about, and that's why it's a concern for me. You know, we're talking about preteen. You know, preteen was that they were still blossoming and they weren't really caught up in all the annex of image, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm looking at some statistics and they're like, suicide for preteens is up like 600%. I mean, it's just during the pandemic, I'm going, this is ridiculous. You know, what tells me that there's a lot going on internally in our preteens.
Yeah. And it can be scary as a parent because preteen and teens start to withdraw and they want to talk to their friends and they are not always as engaged with their parents. And that's somewhat developmentally normative. So it's not something to be super alarmed about. But then as a parent, you're left feeling like, well, what are they thinking? You know, what is going on? And I do find it can be really useful to just be very clear and explicit sometimes. You know, I'm concerned. I wish that you would talk to me about this, or, you know, as your parent, it's my job to protect you and look out for you. And I want to make sure I'm doing that. So could you let me know why you said, you know, whatever you said at dinner? Or, you know, I mean, sometimes the thing is kids are smart, you know, so we don't always have to talk down to them, especially by the time they are preteens. And I think that we gain their trust. We talk to them like real people. And we, you know, really treat them with respect by saying explicitly, like, I care about you and I worry about you and I love you. And, you know, this is what I'm thinking. And what do you think about that? And ask questions. It's so hard because as a parent, we just want to like say, don't do what I did, or, you know, I know better now. And yet it's really important just to shut your mouth and ask questions and let them talk, because that can be one of the most powerful things, is just for them to feel heard. And I'm a talker, so it's hard for me, I know.
I think that you could say the same for Marvin and I as well. one of the things in regards, so we're talking about food now, but one of the other issues, you know, is exercise and how we can incorporate exercise. Yeah. And share a little bit about maybe ways in which we can incorporate that into our day, but also how has that changed now with everything being virtual? And you may be a parent who's home with your child. That may make it easier, that may make it more difficult. What are some things that you see that can be done with the changes that we're dealing with now?
Yeah, I think it's more challenging in many ways, because many kids are engaged in sports or gym class or things that can't happen now or are happening less often. And so I think that's a really valuable outlet for kids that has kind of disappeared in some cases. So, just encouraging kids to walk the dog around the block, you know, go with you when you walk the dog around the block. If it makes sense, like in our little town, there's a little store. So sometimes I try to send a kid like on an errand, very carefully, wearing a mask, of course. But, so I think there are just kind of little things that we can do. Some people have gotten into virtual exercise classes and instruction. It's not really my thing per se. I like to get outside because I feel like we're all in the house so much. And I'm really hoping even when it gets colder in the winter here in the Northeast that we just bundle up and keep taking it outside, because that fresh air is valuable. And, you know, there's even some research that does suggest that when people exercise outside, they enjoy it more and they feel better. So I say all exercise is great. All activity is great. It doesn't matter if you're cleaning or doing chores or, you know, whatever. But there is some benefit to just getting out of the house, I think, especially right now, and especially if kids are all day on their computers for school.
Yes.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about some of the statistics, because I think there are some people that would look at this and go, oh, you know what, you know, I was picked on, or I was this, or I was that. And we all grow up through it. We get through it. It's part of growing up. It's not a big deal. But share some of the statistics as to how some of this has contributed to the success or lack thereof after some of these girls have become adults.
Well, you know, body dissatisfaction contributes to eating disorders. And eating disorders are actually the most deadly of all mental health problems, with about a 10% fatality rate. And so people tend to think, or I think almost eating disorders and body image issues have been kind of glamorized in some outlets. And so people think like, oh, it's not that serious. Or like you said, like, oh, we'll outgrow it. And yet a 10% fatality rate is pretty high when we're talking about a mental health issue. And there's not always a lot of warning. So when someone develops an eating disorder, it's not lack of nutrition typically that would prove fatal. It's like then they have a heart attack or, you know, some sort of organ failure. And so you don't necessarily know that's about to happen. So we really can't, delay if we think that a child has, even if it's just sort of minor dissatisfaction with their appearance, or if they're having a hard time with their peers, you know, it's better safe than sorry first as parents to just offer reassurance and to try to listen and to ask questions, but then also to get a professional involved and to make sure it's someone with some training in these issues so that they can really be the right kind of support. And, you know, one of the maybe few good things to come out of the pandemic is really an increase in telemedicine, and that includes psychological services of all sorts. So a lot of people have moved online or to the phone. So even right now, if a parent is listening and they have concerns, they can go to nationaleatingdisorders.org, and there are practitioners that are listed there, and you can figure out then who is available in your area or by phone or by Zoom. So I think that those are important things to keep in mind. Better safe than sorry when it comes to getting help.
So yeah, that.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I said I just want to just kind of comment in response to that. Thumbs up.
Yeah. You know, I think too, what's nice is I see in the next generation of kids, a lot of the stigma about mental health issues falling away. And I think it's taken a number of generations for us to get there, but we're getting there. And so I think that is really important because people used to be so afraid to get help because of that stigma, right? They didn't want to admit there was something wrong with them. They didn't want to talk to somebody. And increasingly, like I said, that stigma is dissipating. And this may also be a positive effect of social media and people sharing their personal narratives in this sort of public space more often. And so I think young people are not that they're going to always love the idea, of course, but I think that they're more open to it. And that's one of the many things I love about this generation of kids. And I love talking with them and working with them. And they just, I find them to be a really open-minded generation. I just think they're great.
All right. Our guest is Dr. Charlotte Markey and her book, The Body Image Book for Girls, Love Yourself and Grow Up Fearless. Stay with us. We're going to be talking more about this. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
With me is Marvin Smith and Dr. Charlotte Markey, and we are talking about body image. We are talking about having high self-esteem, and we have a question that has come in from a listener. This one reads, my granddaughter, who is 14, is tall and beautiful like her mother, obsessed with makeup and clothes. Our concern is that she is actually looks like she's over 18 now, and she's starting to draw attention from a lot of the older boys. Body image is everything to Allie and her friends. So my daughter and I were really happy to see this topic on, says on Allen's program list. Can you speak to how you suggest parents deal with this situation where they want them to have good body self-esteem, but not take this to the point in which they're looking so much older that it's going to change the way in which they grow up? And that's from Mary in Oregon.
That's a great question from Mary. And I actually touch on this in the book in chapter 4, because for years now, I've had parents come to me, especially it seems like with middle school age girls and the young high school age girls, and say like, well, why do they want to dress that way? It's like the age old dilemma of parents and kids, like you can't go out of the house wearing that, right? And, you know, of course, it makes sense. Kids want to look older. They want to be grown up. That's how we all felt when we were kids. And parents don't want that. They don't want that, one, because we're used to thinking of our kids as kids. And two, because we worry about things like attracting attention in a bad way, right? And I actually tried to explain this in the book because there's not like a straight, clear answer here. Because there's just a lot of nuance that surrounds the topic. because we don't want girls to feel like they're not empowered. We don't want to say like, oh, you have to dress a certain way because, you know, what if so-and-so thinks of you, you know, thinks you're older or thinks that you're interested in them or whatever, right? Because really we shouldn't be telling our girls that it's up to them what other people think. Like that's kind of messed up too. And yet it is the reality. And so, you know, it's like, I kind of do this back and forth in the book where I'm like, okay, on the one hand, no, it's not your responsibility what other people think. On the other hand, we know that this could happen. And so this is part of why your parents might be concerned, or maybe why you should be concerned. And it doesn't mean that as you get older and as you have more autonomy and as you're an adult, go make whatever outrageous clothing choices you want to make, right? Like go be that person if you want to be. But while you're younger and maybe more vulnerable, right? Think about sort of the image you're projecting. And just, it doesn't necessarily mean girls have to make different choices, but I think they need to just be thoughtful about how they're perceived because so much of their future is ahead of them. And this is kind of an unpopular stance among many feminist writers who would say like, no, they should never have to worry. But I feel like that's very unrealistic, right? If we know that being perceived as mature or sexy or whatever is going to mean that a teacher or an older boy or someone engages with you differently and maybe not in a positive way, then I feel like girls should just be thoughtful about that.
Well, it makes me, you know, tying into that, Dr. Markey, is this whole question, this whole notion, you know, how can parents, young adults, you know, help, you know, girls question that beauty, the beauty ideals? I mean, what is that? That positive engagement and a healthy conversation, because I always believe if you can get a kid or a teen or preteen to help navigate and help logically start thinking through the process, they get their own answers and they figure it out.
Yeah. And, you know, some of it is there are these ideals, but these ideals have a cost, and that's what we don't see. Right. So if you look in the media, you see beautiful women and they look perfect and young girls think, I want to be her. Well, of course they think that. That's shoved down all of our throats. Mm-hmm. But there are costs, and the costs are everything from literally financial costs, maybe to buy products, or for some women, it's even cosmetic surgery. And other costs are time, energy. I mean, women spend an average of an hour a day, perhaps not in Zoom pandemic times, but under usual times, it's about an hour of a day, you know, primping, right? Which ends up being 2 weeks out of every year, which is about, start to think of it in terms of like, well, this is actually disadvantaging me because I'm spending too much time on this. And there are other things I could be doing with my time, right? And that's part of how I like to engage girls, is to think of it in terms of like, well, is this most important to you, or are there other things that are at least as important in terms of how you spend your time and how you spend your energy? And also then, you know, if they're going to go out into the world feeling fearless, which truly is what I want for this next generation of girls, then they can't be held back by these standards that are established by other people, right? Because then they don't really have any control sort of over their destiny or over how they feel about themselves.
So how much of this can be dealt with through their friends? Because I think in many cases, there's a choice of friends. And, you know, when, and as a parent, and you look and see their choice, and you can kind of see where this might be going. So how can we help them choose friends that are going to lift them up, that are going to you know, it's, you know, to somehow be able to point out and go, do you notice how, you know, how Betty is constantly lifting up Kathy in the way in which she compliments her versus someone else who might be doing the opposite? So how can we help that as parents so that they're making the choices themselves? Because we know that we're not going to be able to choose who their friends are.
Yeah, and there's this concept in adolescent psychology. It's referred to as, it's an assortative process. So kids are not just picking friends for sort of idiosyncratic reasons. They're picking friends that are engaging in behaviors, in lifestyles that they want to. Not like the peers are necessarily pressuring them. Kids tend to then, you know, look out for these kids that even, you know, and it could be something like that play soccer. And so they become friends with the soccer playing kids, or it could be kids that wear really stylish clothes. So they become friends with those kids. So, I mean, some of it really is about us, I think, just trying to be the most positive influence we can over our own kids, so that the kids they want to be friends with are kids that have the values that matter to us. And, you know, there's only so much we can do, as you said. I think that, you know, where you live matters to a certain extent, that, you know, certain communities and towns and states, for that matter, have different values. And so that can be influential sort of at a broad level. But, you know, we can't totally control our kids. And that's one of the scariest things about parenting.
Yeah. I see we have another a caller question from Joelle. Joelle from New York. She says, I am a nutritionist specializing in eating disorders. 70% of my clients are teens and young women who come to me for a quick fix to their over or underweight problems. It is really wonderful when we identify the underlying issues and they experience breakthroughs that help them transition to overall better health, right? Healthy lifestyles. I can't wait to get your book and actually order all three to show my clients, as well as add to my recommended reading list. She says, thank you, doctor, for the great work.
Well, thank you for being one of the people that is actually, you know, at the front lines working with kids, because these can be really, really difficult issues to deal with in clinical settings. I know eating disorders can be incredibly scary, very stubborn and resistant to treatment. And so we need really good clinicians out there. So I am thankful to all the people who are doing the work day after day that then I can refer people to as well, because I can't be a professor and write books and also be a full-time clinician. So I think that, you know, one thing that's been really rewarding in working in more public spaces with blogging and writing books is being able to connect with like-minded professionals and just realizing that there's so many of us out there that want what's best for kids. We want them to grow up. We want them to be healthy and strong and feel empowered. And it's just really cool when you get to talk with other people with like those same goals, and we come at it from different directions often. But I like to think that together we're making a difference. We're doing something.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Exactly.
Definitely.
Yeah.
One of the things, and even prior to COVID, we were all realizing that screen time is becoming a problem. So share with us a little bit about, you know, how do we encourage them to get more in love with the moment, get more in, you know, in touch with who they are, and not so much what somebody on a screen is telling them who they should be or who they must be or what's beautiful. How can we make that shift as parents or as influencers? It can be teachers, anybody that's working with them. What are some suggestions? And I know you have some in the book, but what are some you can share with our listeners?
Yeah, I do talk about social media and screen time in general in the book, because this is really important to adolescent development, period. But also, especially when we're talking about body image and self-esteem issues. And I think it's really important as parents that we set some parameters, and we have to make sure that kids have actual real world interactions. Of course, we have to be sure that's safe right now. But, you know, in normal times, real world interactions are very important. We can't just have all online interactions. And I think too, talking about media literacy with kids, this is one thing that I wish happened in school settings more, because I think it would be a really good addition to a lot of sort of health and developmental curricula in school settings, but it doesn't typically. And so as parents, we need to really sometimes explain to kids that a lot of the media is really not real. It's very fake, And a lot of it comes down to business. There are people trying to sell us things. And it sounds very cynical. And a lot of kids will push back. So you're like, what do you mean? You know? And then these are the same kids who will later have been scrolling on Instagram and realize they need a certain, you know, style of pants or something. Mm-hmm. So I think just pointing out and helping kids make those connections. And kids, they're sort of, I don't want to say rebellious because that sounds negative, but there's, you know, they start to become a little bit more defiant and start to question things more. And that's very natural, developmentally speaking, during the adolescent years. And so when we put into their heads this idea that other people might be kind of trying to dupe you, that tends to really get them engaged, right? They're like, wait a second, I don't want to be, you know, duped by this influencer or this ad or whatever, or, you know, if the media is all about trying to sell me things, that makes it kind of less interesting to me. And so that can be, I think, not a untruthful angle at all. Very much a realistic angle, but a kind of engaging angle with when it comes to talking to teens.
Yeah, I think that there's so much in there's so much that is put on trying to, they're essentially trying to, they're buying our eyeballs, they're buying our ears, yeah. You know, and to try to get the kids to understand that. And one of the stories that I have with one of my sons was going into a store, and he was probably 13, and he found a pair of tennis shoes that he wanted that had a very famous logo on it. And he found this, and he's, "Dad, I need these shoes." And so we walked around, and I found essentially the exact same pair, only they didn't have that special logo on it, but it was the same in every way. And I said, "Well, let me explain something. You want a pair of shoes, and I, as your father, am going to get you a pair of tennis shoes. And this pair of tennis shoes is $45. And this pair over here is $100 with that logo. So what you now need is $55 of your own money if you want the $100 pair of shoes." And all of a sudden, the $100 pair of shoes wasn't as important.
Yeah.
When it's put that way.
And we said the same thing in our household. When my kids were all coming up, I said, there's a difference between a need and a want. You know, you may want it, but that's not a need. If you need it, we're going to take care of it. Mm-hmm. But a want, that's a whole other level. And so now, I was talking to one of my sons the other day, and to see how they turn things back on you, go, I was talking to my son, he goes, "Dad, is that a need or a want?" I'm like, "Oh, really?"
That means he was paying attention. So that means it sunk in.
I think it's a great story, and it's so important to teach kids that what they see as being sold as essential is not necessarily really essential. And on the same token, to make sure that they feel like we're going to meet their basic needs, right? And so I think this differentiation between needs and wants can be really valuable. And I think it's okay to indulge and splurge a little bit sometimes or for a special occasion or something. But I do think just a sort of common sense. We're not born with like sort of logical common sense. Like we have to learn it. And some of it's very easy. Like that's a really great, easy lesson, right? Like mm-hmm. these shoes are one's more than twice the price of the other one. So how do you really think that even makes sense? Like, why is that? And pretty young kids can start to like figure this out and be like, well, yeah, that doesn't really make sense.
Charlotte, one of the things that we do on this show, and we call it the magic wand. Now, if I could hand you the magic wand and you could make two changes, and it could be in the way in which our school system approaches things, it could be, you know, but something that goes to the subject matter that we're talking about. You now have the power. What are those changes that you would make that would get us closer to where we need to be?
Oh, that's so much power. I'm not really used to having any power. So,
well, what Marvin and I do, we empower people. That's been our life, is to empower others. So that's what we're doing for you right
it.
Now.
I know. I want to enjoy this for the few moments where it lasts. I appreciate that. I think one thing that would be really amazing and awesome to do is to take some of the health curriculum in schools and alter it to include some of this information from my book about being. And, you know, it's like what we focus on in schools when we try to teach kids about health is like, you know, safe sex or abstinence and don't do drugs. Mm-hmm. And we don't like cover some of like the stuff that they should be doing every day, like eating well. And if we do, we do it in a very cursory way. And there's just so much, I think, nuance and psychology that surrounds these topics that kids would benefit from being exposed to gradually and at a young age. And so, you know, if I could wave a magic wand, I would love to see just schools just sort of starting the conversation more and that being really normative, because I think that that would then branch out into families and communities in ways that would be really, really valuable. So I think that would be the first thing. And I have to get advertising as my second big thing. See, I'm not picking little things. I'm using my power here. So I would like advertising to continue to evolve in a way that it has been evolving in recent years to include more diversity. And that's important on every level. It's important in terms of body size. It's important in terms of race, ethnicity. I think it's important in terms of sexual orientation. I just would like to see there continue to be an embrace in public spaces of people living authentically and as they are, and not just all perfected and glossed over and photoshopped, but in a way that hopefully more young people could kind of look up to and say like, oh yeah, that's like me. As opposed to thinking I have changed to be reflected in those media sort of public spaces, I think would do a world of good.
Picture says 1,000 words.
And yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah. So Fifth Avenue, make it so.
That's right.
That's right.
So we're going to like, you know, infiltrate all the school system and the advertising industry. So like I said, yeah. Go big.
I love it.
Well, it's not bad though, because one thing I realized with schools, they're inserting a bunch of other stuff I call junk. I'm not going to go too far, yeah, but it's like I'm going there adding things that have, to me, I look at my and people, it has no value, mm-hmm. right? But it's being inserted. You know, and on kind of a segue for me, you know, in a few weeks, U.S. elections will be held. And for me, you know, I'm not voting for a man nor a woman, color or age. I'm not rallying for personalities, right? I'm not voting for a party. And I'm going to kind of leave it at that. And Alan, maybe you can segue in. So I know we got to close off the show.
And you're right. If we have a couple minutes, I can certainly have some opinions on that too. But Charlotte, I just really want to thank you and acknowledge you for being somebody who's making a difference. And that's what this show is about and what our job is hopefully to be able to empower you, but also to empower the people out there. You know, you've taken the time to put together a book. And for those, if you want to get more information, you can go to bodyimagebookforgirls.com, get more information, or again, the Body Image Book for Girls. You can get it wherever books are sold. Pass it on. The way in which we're going to make a difference is we're going to do it by helping the next generation. And this is one of the many ways that we can do it. We can do it by bringing out positive things. Show your child love. Show them that they are everything that they need to be. And they don't need whatever it is that they're being told on the internet or they're being told by advertisers, that they are wonderful in the way in which they are. And if we can have enough people like Charlotte, like Marvin, that are out there spreading this message, we can hopefully offset some of those other messages that are geared more towards themselves making money and not necessarily doing what's best for all of us. So thank you, Charlotte.
And I love the tagline, love yourself and grow up fearless.
You know, one of the girls helped me come up with that. One of the girls I interviewed. So I can't take full credit, But that just goes to show you, like I said, how amazing this next generation is and how much better we can make them even, I think. So thank you for this opportunity to speak with your audience and to get this message out there. And it's really been a pleasure to talk with both of you.
Well, thank you. It was our pleasure. And so, Marvin, going a little bit with what you just touched on, and we've really only got about a minute or two. So, you know, what you mentioned about the fact, obviously, what we have an election coming up. And I love the fact that you started with, you know, that we're not voting for someone based on a man, a woman, a color, an age, or whatever their party is or personality. But, you know, at least from my standpoint, I'm voting for a constitutional government. I'm voting for a vibrant economy. I'm voting for a freedom of religion. I'm voting for the ability for anybody to rise above their circumstances and become successful. Okay, I'm voting for my children and my grandchildren that I don't have yet, but hope to, you know, to be able to choose their own path in life, including how and where they're educated, and that they're not indoctrinated. So, you know, these are the things that I think if we get back to all of us and have a people that understand, first of all, and I want everybody to spread this too, politicians are servants. That's their job. Okay. Their job is to serve us as the population, not to exploit us as a population. So we seem to have gotten away from that. The focus is not where it should be. So think about this when you go vote. Make your decisions, and it may be that, you know, that by the next time we're doing this, that we will have a 3 or 4 party system so that we will have more choices and there will be more people that are focusing on the positive. Marvin?
Good note, a good closing note, and here, and the bottom line is, you know, as a firm believer, a man of God and faith, family is important to me. My faith is important, and the community where I live and the communities I support. So we definitely need to have people that are in office that support we the people.
Perfect. And for everybody out there, again, be with us again next Monday, because we're going to be joined by Gina Gardner, the author of Thriving, Not Just Surviving, The 5 Secrets of Pathways to Happiness, Success, and Fulfillment. Okay. And in this interview, she's going to share the keys to being happy, staying happy, and spreading happiness to others. So again, be with us. These are some of the things that we want to continue to bring you. And if you get the opportunity, visit our archives of past shows. We may have something that we've already done that's there waiting for you to listen to. You can go to answersforthefamily.com and please subscribe to the show and it will be sent to you. You can do it through iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Speaker, Google Review. It will help us reach more people, and I want you to know that we greatly appreciate it. The next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. We try to make them as very positive as possible. And again, if you like them, make a comment. And the main thing is, for everybody out there, continue to spread the word, but just be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.